Fastam I, hello and welcome to this episode of Agenda. I'm Ewan Gorn. With more and more people consigned to the four walls of their homes, there's been a focus on mental health and how people can access support throughout the COVID-19 pandemic. Manx mental health charity Qwing has launched a digital TV channel to make its online webinars, workshops, chat and forums more readily available. In the second half of the programme, we speak to a BBC Isle of Man journalist about the challenges of covering the pandemic whilst in self-isolation. Isle of Man charity Qwing has been working on its response to the coronavirus pandemic over the last 2 weeks, and it's now established an online TV channel to offer its range of services to those affected. This includes webinars, workshops and other material to do with well-being, education, interviews and other mental health content. There are also forums available to help people get in touch with the charity to let them know what content they'd like to see on the channel. Qwing TV is a free service available to members who sign up via a quick registration process. Founder of the mental health charity, Graham Clucas, explained more about the initiative to me.
Qwing TV came out of a thought that we were going to start a local community radio station when we moved to our new premises, and we sat down and talked about it and thought it'd be far better to start a TV station. So there's well-being programs, so we're doing mindfulness most mornings, we've got yoga, we're doing workshops, we're doing training to help people develop skills that can help. So one of the things we're delivering online is parts of our peer mentor program. So you can sign up and start training to be a peer mentor, which gives you the skills to keep yourself well while supporting other people. We have tied in with some of our international partners who have been working with us for a number of years. So we're working with some of the top community development guys. We're exploring different subjects in interviews. So we're looking at recovery capital on Thursday with one of the top professors in the world who's been studying this for 20 years and how recovery capital might help the Isle of Man community recover quicker. You know, so it's very much at the moment, it's about giving people hope that this will pass and then we can grow into something, being Manx again, maybe.
Why do you think a TV channel is the way to go there?
It's very much about 80% of communication is nonverbal. So if you're stuck at home isolated, it's nice to be able to see someone on the screen who might be in a similar situation as you, who might be self-isolating, who might be feeling lonely. So, you know, that face-to-face contact is far more important than just the voice.
And that companionship, how are you hoping to offer it? Is the TV service going to be through a website, on Skype? How's it going to work?
Okay, so at the moment, you have to sign in and become a member of our website, which is qwing.im. And this gives you a complete interactive, you can ask questions. We're also holding Zoom conferences for people. So we're doing small groups. People are asking for small groups, so we're doing that. We're doing webinars. But it's all about connecting and feeling you belong. And if you have questions or have ideas, give us a shout. We'll make it happen.
Tell us about some of the, you mentioned it there, but some of the things like recovery capital, like some of the classes and the sort of seminars you're doing. Just tell us a little bit more about what the focus is there.
There's a theory in social science. If you build 5 different capitals into someone's life, their mental well-being, their physical well-being, and how they interact with people vastly improves. And because of what's happened over the last month or so, in a way, most people's recovery capital have been stripped. And a lot of what we do at Qwing and have been doing for a couple of years is about building recovery capital. And we're just making it more available by going digital.
How difficult has it been because of the measures that are in place? How tricky has that made the work of the charity?
In some ways, it's made the work easier, but in other ways, it's throwing challenges up. So it's keeping people connected, it's keeping the peer mentors connected, it's keeping the people who come on to the Discovery Centre connected. And not everybody's up to date with IT and Zoom and Skype. So it's having those conversations and getting people up to speed and then going forward. So that's been one of the challenges, and lots of telephone calls.
has much of your time been dedicated to getting people sort of technologically able to access what you're going to do? Because I know certain conversations I've had, even just with my family, getting them set up with things like Skype, etc., it's been a challenge for them. So how much of a challenge has that been for Qing? And also, is it a challenge to make sure you can help perhaps older members of the community who may have difficulties accessing that sort of technology?
Yeah, so with the Qing community members, the people training to be peer mentors and the people who come to the Discovery Centre, we have a group of peer mentors who have been utterly amazing, having conversations with people who don't get IT and learning from those experiences. Once we got the core community of Qing Digital, where we're using those experiences, we hope to help other older members who we had no contact with. You know, it's a learning process for us, so we can then pass that learning on to others.
Back to the TV station, when do you think you're going to be ready to broadcast your first stuff? Or has it started already?
Okay, so it started already. So we used last week as a test. And this week we're getting more and more programs, and we're linking in with some of our international partners. So we're sharing our resources with them, and they're sharing their resources with us. So it's a work in progress.
Founder of Qing, Graham Klukas. To find out more about the charity's online TV channel, head to qing.im. That's Q-U-I-N-G, qing.im. You're listening to Agenda on Manx Radio. Well, in the second half of the programme, we're speaking to a BBC reporter on the Isle of Man, Alex Bell. Alex has been in self-isolation. I think he's on day 13, so not long left to go. Now, Alex joins us now on the phone. Alex, how are you doing?
Evening, Ewan. Yeah, I'm all right, actually. Yeah, I'm fine. Coming towards the end of the isolation period now, so eager to get out for a bit of a walk. And actually, I need to come into the office to do a few things tomorrow. So we'll do that.
You're all okay, aren't you? Nothing to report?
I'm fine. Yeah, it was last Tuesday I woke up and I felt a little bit unpleasant. It was a bit of a dry cough, which obviously just fills you with dread straight away if you have any kind of cough at this time. Blocked nose, typical kind of coldy symptoms. I did immediately, first thought was to ring 111 and ask what the best thing to do was. I'd heard that much about the 111 line. I sort of wanted to see what it was like. They were very helpful. They didn't think that I needed a test, which I was happy to accept. They told me to self-isolate because I was showing one of the two big risk symptoms, which was the cough. I didn't have a fever at this point, but over the course of that Tuesday, I really started to feel unwell. I kind of had this real flu-y chill, the aches, which we've heard loads about, struggled to sleep. And then over the next few days, I was kind of getting a bit short of breath and coughing my lungs up a bit, if you'll allow me to be crude. It was only a few days, though. It was what you'd call mild symptoms. Absolutely no suggestion it was or wasn't COVID-19. So let's not get ahead of ourselves. But by sort of Friday, I was feeling all right. You might still be able to hear. I've got a bit of a blocked nose. I'm still coughing from time to time, but I am okay. So the plan is to come out of self-isolation tomorrow, still keep my distance from everybody. I've got myself one of these masks, these home-fashioned masks, which they say are actually up to 90% effective if you do them right out of old fabric and tissue. So I'm going to be wearing that. I'm going to be avoiding supermarkets as well. But yeah, I'm fine.
And you are a key worker, aren't you?
Yeah, like yourself, Ewan, as a public service media representative, as someone who works in the news for the likes of Manx Radio, BBC, etc., we're all under this key worker banner as well. Possibly not quite on the level of heroism as people who work out there in the NHS and actually on the front line, but yeah, we're classed as key workers, so.
Well, let's get to work then, Alex, because you haven't just been on your sick bed. You've been taking part for the BBC in these COVID conferences, for want of a better description. How have you found them?
They've been something of a surreal experience, and not just because this is entirely an unprecedented situation for the Isle of Man. We've never lived through something like this ourselves. We've never seen such a daily engagement between ministers and the general public. I mean, just looking at some of these online viewing figures, the daily streams do attract thousands upon thousands of people per day. Manx people really do want to know what these ministers have to say on a daily basis. Attending them has been, as I say, a little bit surreal. It's felt at times like being in some sort of bizarre TV show. We were there at the start. It was all very cozy. It was transacted, you know, with us there in person with cameras and mics and everything, like a traditional press conference in a very small room in government offices. That then moved to a bigger room in government offices as more media came. Then, by a couple of weeks ago, once we'd had our first confirmed case of COVID on the Isle of Man, we were being forced to stand 2 metres apart, so to maintain social distance. Then, I think once they'd found a provider for the technology, it moved into online streaming. So they're streamed, as we all know, every day, live on Manx Radio and on various Facebook pages and via Greenlight TV's official account and on the government website as well. But the way journalists interact, I don't know how many people know this, the way journalists are there is through Zoom. And Zoom is an application, if you're not familiar with it, which is a little bit like Skype or FaceTime, but it allows for group conference video calls. So the journalists log on at 4:05 or 4:10, or in my case, sometimes 4:01 every day. And we can all see each other. We can all see the chief minister or the health minister or whoever's doing the address. Mm. And then one by one, our mics are magically unmuted and we can face to face ask them questions.
So how is that? Because obviously the cut and thrust of our job, a lot of it is about being right next to the person, speaking to them face to face. Do you lose something with the digital questioning?
Yeah, in a way, I think you do. I've always been a little bit sheepish about doing any kind of interview remotely, whether it's an interview over the phone or an interview on Skype or FaceTime. I've never really enjoyed that because I think one of the really crucial things about interviewing someone is noticing their body language, their tiny little facial expression changes that they make, that even the way they breathe sometimes. And it's not necessarily a combative interview which you're looking for, but I think the way a person acts in an interview situation can really tell you a lot about what's on their mind and give you some subtext to their answer, perhaps. And I think when you're in this press conference digital environment, you do lose a bit of that. Yeah. But as I say, we're not asking combative questions. We are trying to extract information and data from these ministers and politicians and other
people. How do you strike the balance there? Because there'll be some crying out for increased scrutiny during this time from the media towards government, but others will be saying, you know, there's a call for unity. Let's sort of work together. So how do you balance those two sort of competing demands on the media?
I think you've hit a really crucial point there, Ewan, because at a time like this, nobody, I know there are people who will argue with me here, but nobody, certainly in the long term, saw this coming. We weren't really prepared for it. And what we have to do as journalists, especially working in that public service role, which I mentioned before, is to be not only a source of scrutiny, of analysis, of at times critical thinking, but also just simply what the media and broadcasting was originally designed to be, which is a conduit, a delivery service for information. And when the information is changing so rapidly every day, the advice is changing, the rules are changing, we have to deliver that in its purest and simplest form, which takes up a lot of our time, a lot of our resources. And then after that, and this is one of the sort of benefits of being in self-isolation, I guess, it gives you a little bit more time to think about some of the more critical questions about testing, about data collection, about population management. And then you can put those kind of critical analytical concerns to the ministers. And I hope that does come across.
Do journalists have to up their game in respect of some of the things you've mentioned, like statistics? And, you know, this is a public health story. It's about health. It's about the hospital. You know, these are complicated issues in certain ways, you know, viruses, medicines. Do you have to swat up? Do you have to up your game to fully understand what actually is happening?
I think it is a public health issue there, as you say, but it is also a political question. It's political in the sense that it is this policy the right thing? Is locking down the right thing? And if you look at all the countries all over the world and compare their approaches, you see a very interesting pattern of approaches. I mean, look at America, for example. That's the definition of laissez-faire governance at the moment, isn't it? And they may pay a heavy price for that. Sweden, that's a really interesting example of a place. The pubs in Sweden aren't shut. The schools in Sweden still haven't shut down. But they're collecting data and defining this epidemic in a very different way. And crucially, they've given a whole lot more power to their state epidemiologists, which I think is important there. Your question was about swatting up and learning your trade, I guess. It's important to be able to think like a journalist, act like a journalist, question people when they say these things. But I think there is almost a limit to that. What this crisis has manufactured, I'm going to borrow some words from Howard Quayle here, which I never thought I'd do, is it's created a whole lot of armchair experts. And these are people who think they know the ins and outs of epidemiology and virology and medicine and public health without actually having all that much expertise in it. So I think it's important to hold the politicians to account, yes. But when the real experts, the public health figures, stand up and speak, my understanding kind of tails off a little bit, and I'm more inclined to listen to what they have to say.
So is there no room to challenge them as experts in their field?
I think there's always room to challenge, but I think you have to draw a line somewhere between being blithe with these people and kind of playing them at their own game, because when you take on, as a layperson, someone who's spent their life in medicine and public health, you're treading quite a dangerous path, and that's when misinformation can start to seep out.
Well, I just want to ask you, we talked about the conferences. You're not just asking questions at conferences, you're still gathering material, stories, stuff for the television, of course. How easy is that? Because particularly the television, when you've got to do filming, I mean, with all the rules in place, how have you managed that?
Now, it's a tricky question for me on personal terms, this one, because actually I started my self-isolation just around, I think it was the same day as these lockdown measures were announced. So I've kind of very much moved with the times in terms of that. What I do know is my BBC colleagues in television now have very, very strict parameters about how they can conduct video journalism. So you'll see on BBC News and on ITN News and Sky News, these reports are being filed where they'd ordinarily stand within, again, being crude, spitting distance of an interviewee. They're now standing more than 6 feet back. They have these kind of telescopic pole microphones, which they use. You can see the cameramen and women are standing at least 6 feet away from their subjects as well, using those Zoom lenses. That's not been a challenge I've had to confront yet. I do work as a video journalist solo, so I'm kind of a one-man band. That may make it easier for me because there are fewer staff out and about to deal with. But what this has really shown is that journalists can work together between different organisations. I've been sat here in my bedroom, between my bedroom and my shed, actually, for the majority of this. I've kind of fashioned the shed into a little home office. And all my content has been gathered either by my own fair hands with Skype and FaceTime and phone calls and video conferences and things like that. But a lot of the pictures from out in the field, other journalists, the likes of Paul Moulton from MTTV, your colleagues from Manx Radio, ITV, they've happily and obligingly sent me content over to use. I've shared content with other media organisations where applicable as well. So it's been a real time of unity between journalists, at least on the Isle of Man.
And the role of citizen journalists to an extent, how has that emerged, do you think? Do you think, you talked about misleading information on social media, that's always going to be an issue, but how much of the public helped you in terms of your media functions?
It's been largely the same, actually. I mentioned there we've been able to pool resources, get things from the likes of Tynwald, which Paul Moulton filmed for us and we could use bits of. What I've also been doing is anytime I've spoken to a citizen, someone who's living through this crisis as we all are and has a story to tell, I've spoke to them on FaceTime, for example. I've spoken to a number of residents who've been stuck overseas, unable to get back to the Isle of Man. And as well as FaceTiming them, you always ask, can you show us where you are? Can you just flip that camera phone around and give us a few pictures, a little bit of a flavour of what it's like in your hotel room or in that little compound where you are at the moment or in your family home? And some of the pictures you get back are actually quite striking. They say a picture tells a thousand words, don't they? And the stories these pictures of isolation and being stranded can tell are quite phenomenal.
Mm. Now, just finally, and thank you for speaking to me, by the way, how easy has it been to strike a balance between conveying what is very important public information that changes quite rapidly and not causing unnecessary panic? I'm talking probably more about last week, maybe the initial stages of this pandemic, rather than now when we seem to have settled into a pattern. But how wary were you of sensationalising things?
I think, again, with a crisis like this, like coronavirus, an unseen enemy, as it's been called, there's a lot of rhetoric going around. And it's really important as a journalist, but also as a viewer, as a listener, to be able to separate those powerful words from the raw facts, because it is a frightening time. It's a very frightening time for all of us. And by its nature, this virus, which is lethal, it is taking lives, it is putting extreme pressure on health services and countries and their economies and their people across the globe. It's very natural to be scared by that. And that's okay. But at the same time, we've got to just look at the facts for what they are. These figures, sensational as they may appear, can be somewhat misleading as well. So when we see something like 1,000 deaths in a day recorded in a country, it's important not to look at that figure in isolation, but to look at it in the context of what that country experiences on a day-to-day basis. Let me give you one example. We know 450 people die every day in the UK from cancer or cancer-related illnesses. And that's shocking when you hear that. It's not something we hear about, but it does, I hope, in a very macabre way, help to contextualize the threat that COVID-19 faces. And the figures, I guess the figures, if you live on the Isle of Man, can give you some comfort as well. Maybe not many people know that we are in the top 20 most tested nations in the entire world. We sit somewhere alongside Slovenia and Estonia and Hong Kong and Israel. We actually sit above all those countries because we've tested something like 17,000 out of every million people on the Isle of Man. Now, there's not a million people on the Isle of Man, but if you compute all those numbers and bring them down to the same level per capita, you see that we've tested far more people than the likes of Australia and Italy and Germany and the UK and Spain and the USA. And that gives us some hope, I think, if we're testing on this scale and our confirmed number of cases, currently around 0.16 infection rate of the population. If we can test a lot of people and our caseload is still relatively low, it is increasing, but it is still relatively low, then I think that can give us some comfort. So I guess my answer to that would be, how do we balance it? How do we stop panic from spreading? Well, we keep it rational, as we always try and do. We try and separate those sensational stories and headlines and rhetoric from the figures.
Alex Bell, Northwest Tonight, Isle of Man TV reporter, thank you very much for joining us on Agenda today.
Thank you.
That was Alex Bell. You're listening to Agenda on Manx Radio. That's the end of this episode, but we'll be back with more from Agenda next week. And you can listen again to this episode online as a podcast via the Manx Radio website or, of course, through Spotify. But for now, Gurumayu, stay safe and goodbye.